This is Weekend Edition on WNYC. Good morning. I'm David First. Members of the news media received a wake-up call on November 9th, and the takeaway seems to be that we don't matter. Painstakingly researched investigations seem to have no meaningful impact on public opinion. Reputable fact-checkers are not believed by a large portion of the population. Not even the hot mic video of Donald Trump bragging about assaulting women seemed to matter. And the question a lot of journalists are asking is, did we fail to do our job in 2016? And if so, what changes might make a difference? Joining us to discuss how the media moves forward is Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
So let me just ask you this directly. Does a Trump victory represent a failure of media and polling?
If only we were so powerful. The polls track the public. They influence the public to some extent. We don't know how much. And the same really goes for the media. I think the media failure principally is one of narrative. It started out regarding Trump as a joke, a great ratings-grabbing joke. Now we know what kind of other grabbing, but at that point, ratings grabbing. And then after the primaries, the narrative shifted abruptly to, oh my God, this is the collapse of civilization, with no space in between. If they hadn't normalized his behavior earlier, given him a pass, hadn't applied a double standard to his malfeasance as opposed to Hillary Clinton's, then we might have had some more influence.
Treating him more like a celebrity than a candidate to early and handing him tons of airtime made it impossible to shift gears?
It's not so much the airtime as it is the nature of the airtime. Come and amuse us. Make us laugh. We won't examine your business dealings. I mean, all of these things happened later and probably too late. By then, the people who voted for him were invested, except for the 12%, which was an incredibly high number, actually, of undecideds in the last days of the campaign, which for the most part, broke for Trump. And we can try and read the tea leaves, whether it was Comey or something else, because the public seemed to be turning on a dime. The polls were so volatile. But the fact is that we didn't create Trump, but we certainly abetted him. And we'll never know if we didn't at the beginning, would it have made any difference to the public who voted for him?
Is there a chance that this particular election was such a special circumstance? If this was a change election and millions of Americans wanted to send this message to the establishment, would any coverage have made any difference?
Well, that's precisely the question. I think it would have. I mean, let us not forget that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. But the fact is, there has been a substantial slice of the population that has been ignored by not just the media elites, but the elites of all type. It is an obvious geographic issue. We have to start talking to each other. And I think that's the role that the media can start to play in the future. Not contribute to the balkanization, maybe, but try and build bridges. And that does not mean a kind of phony, false balance where someone will say something fact-based and someone will say something that is entirely made up and you treat them as equal and therefore you're a fair broker. No. I think your job is to be the surrogate for the public and to find the truth. But that means not keeping voices off the air and not bringing them on and treating them uncritically, but to just foster the kind of confrontations in an honest way that we haven't done very much of in this election season.
Well, On the Media, your show, has been taking a hard look at itself. You recorded your editorial meeting this week. It included a conversation between you and co-host Bob Garfield, and it is a fascinating and sometimes painful chat. At one point, Bob is pondering how the show should move forward, and he talks about the way that he insisted that the show cover Trump during the campaign, not as a politician, but as a threat to democracy.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been pounding that message as often as I can, and that crosses the line between journalism that we expect into a kind of activism. I don't think I ever mentioned Hillary Clinton's name during the whole course of the campaign, but I, and by extension the show, became an activist player in anti-Trumpism. So now what do we do?
Can you talk about that?
We talked about it a lot when we moved in that direction. I decided to go along with Bob and to assist him in this because I felt this was truly an extraordinary moment. I think that now the time has come not to be calling people names and so on and impugning their motives, but to try and understand what we missed and try and understand the part of the country we don't live in and we don't talk to very much. Figure out what's going on. Probe, challenge, and bring those voices on and scale back the commentary. In other words, stop telling people to be outraged. Stop telling them how to feel. That doesn't mean become bland and conventional. I just think that the time has come to start bringing in people that we don't hear from, people from the center of the country, people, I mean, we work hard to ensure that there's a diverse mix of voices on the show, and I think that we need to pursue that goal even harder than we ever have before, because what we have is a country that simply doesn't speak to itself, and I fear we may have spent at least some chunk of the past electoral season speaking to our colleagues or the otherwise converted.
In addition to the question as to whether journalists' work is meaningless in Trump's America, there's also the possibility of an attack on the very idea of a free press made by Trump himself on the trail.
I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met. If I become president, oh, do they have problems. They're going to have such problems.
What do you make of this? How do we cover this?
Well, how do we cover it? Like you did, like I did, we quote it. I mean, the threats he makes against the media are not all that different from the ones he makes against all kinds of other groups. The fact is that's a lot of campaign blah, da, blah, da, blah, da, blah. And although he is litigious, if he thinks he's going to lose or if he thinks he could risk something by pursuing a legal case, he'll just threaten it and he won't pursue it. He's not going to have a lot of time. There is a financial problem. The mainstream media, so-called, is certainly in straitened circumstances now. There isn't a lot of money for lawsuits. I expect that probably some lawyers will come forward and offer their services for free should there be a legitimate threat. But at this point, I don't see any reason for us to shudder, at least no more than anyone else. I don't think anyone is going to end up in irons. We do have a constitution that protects a free press. As terrifying as this may be, and as disheartening, you know, is our belief in our institutions so weak that we can't wait and see before calling it game over?
Brooke Gladstone, co-host of WNYC's On the Media, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.